Access number 32394, this is Don Parrington, Real 10. Now, we want to talk about life in the camp, and in general terms, certainly at the start. Now, can you remember any idea what kind of daily routine you had? We've talked about, you know, the accommodation, but how would your day start? What was a typical day like?
Well, there were different things that were going on in the camp you could participate in. You divide it into a few sections. You were able to deal with a section which dealt with religion. You've got a section which deals with your possibilities of studying for something that you wish to take up in later life when you get back to England. There's sports, because the facilities for playing sports now are better because we're getting the equipment in through the Red Cross. And so we've got the interest in the sports, both cricket and football, depending on the season.
That's right. So that's some things you did during the day. Now, how would your day start, though?
Well, the day starts with the parade, being on parade at a certain time of the morning, which is usually very early in the morning.
Now, what were these are these roll calls?
They were roll calls. They counted each man and made sure that the numbers were... if the numbers were incorrect when they counted them, they'd go through it again and again and again and kept you waiting. And bearing in mind, if this was in winter time, summertime it didn't matter, but in winter time, people were getting really very uptight about it. However,
And were you in ranks, were you? I mean,
yes, so they're all lined up in ranks, yes, and it should be easy to account, but sometimes you get some of our chaps who have been a bit on the naughty side and trying to cover up anything that might be necessary if one of them had tried to escape. And that is the only reason. They were as Germans are, they're meticulous in everything they do. And so if after the first two counts, it wasn't right, they would try it again. And quite often it was they found they'd not counted it correctly. But I think this was typical of the Germans with anything like this. And to make it more difficult, I think they did it deliberately. Because they weren't bothered about standing about, but the prisoners didn't like it. They wanted to get it over with and back to normal. So as far as the parades and that, now if something happens, by the way, talking about parades and roll calls, is sometimes they have a problem that they think somebody's escaped. And no matter what the time of day it is, if they have that suspicion, they'll call everybody, wherever they are, back onto a routine roll call. And they've got to try and satisfy themselves that this particular number that they think is missing is incorrect, which is, again, very difficult to assess. But that was the German way of doing things. We didn't know whether anybody was escaping as individuals.
I'll come back to escapes later. Yeah. Then you said there's a three thing. So after roll call, were you free for the day?
Yeah, then you were free, and you were free the whole time, really, until the normal roll call, which was the evening one.
So two a day?
So there'd be two a day.
Plus any extras if they thought someone had
escaped. Oh, yes, that's right.
Now, well, let's look at you mentioned three things. Let's start with the religion side then. Who organised that? What sort of thing was that?
Well, the religion was primarily at the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, and it was divided into denominations. I mean, there'd be Jewish, there'd be C of E, there'd be different types of religion. All the different types were actually covered by somebody who was... I had been an official in that particular denomination, such as whether they were C of E or Jewish or Catholic or whatever. There was always somebody who was able to take charge of that particular section whenever it was necessary. The same with happened on the Sunday. They had all the different services at different times.
And then the did you go?
Yes, I went to the C of E.
Was it important to you, do you think?
Well, I think people realised if you did have a faith at all, it was then there was the time to go. And what we did have in our establishment, the person who was in charge of the, he was a wonderful speaker, and I think he did an awful lot of good. In fact, we met him in back in England eventually. And he was very well known, and as far as we were concerned, you knew you were going to get a good number of people going to when it was his turn to give the sermon.
Now, the second thing you mentioned was school, a study.
Well,
you seem to have converted two huts into schoolrooms.
Yeah.
Tell us the whole of what you were doing.
Well, I mean, some took accountancy, some took up different sports elements regarding the necessary training to do certain things. They had a varying amount of subjects which were covered, mainly to do with what you were likely to be doing or wanting to do when things, the war was finished and you were looking forward to a new job, or B, what kind of job would you like, and from that developed a series of trainees, if you like. We had one or two people who were professionals virtually in one group or another, and they in turn were the ones that gave the lectures to individuals. So you can say there was quite a few different types of professions that were covered.
Now tell me about these school rooms, and you got some school equipment as well. You seem to, you know, it was well organised, wasn't it?
Oh yes, yes. Well, these again were all coming through via the Red Cross. I mean, we didn't have anything initially at all when we got into the camp, but if I've just got to go in retrospect, when we went into that camp, the camp was brand new. It wasn't actually completed by any stretch of imagination. And it was only after a few months did we get anything coming in the way of equipment. And if that, I'm just sidelining it a bit, that also employed, that also was the same when we were talking about Red Cross parcels.
You said, yeah.
And so when it all came together, all these things that were mentioned were new to the camp, so it was a question, you could put your name down for a particular thing at any time.
Now what about these school huts? I mean, I've not heard of these. You actually converted two huts into school rooms. Not you, but they, you know.
No, well, it would only be the same as the ones that we were living in, and they would be just two allocated, of the huts would be allocated to the professions and the doing the other things, which would be like religion would have one part of it, and then the accountancy or the professionals would have another part, and then the other part would be sports. And all those sections were dealt with within the two huts.
Now, what courses did you do?
Oh, I did accountancy, because it was when I joined up, I was the office boy, actually. So, yes, I decided on an accountancy.
Was it a proper accountancy course? What do you remember? I mean, how far did it go?
Well, that is very difficult, answering that, because there was so much going on at the time I couldn't tell you really how deeply it was, because there's so many aspects of accountancy.
No, that's fair. But it was serious,
It was definitely serious. And also, it was very appreciated.
You could do professional qualifications in some camps. Were you doing a qualification?
No, I wasn't doing.
You were just studying?
No, right? I was just studying generally.
And French, you seem to have done as well, beginners. Did you
well, remember? I was doing a bit on the beginner's side, yes, which was, I just found it interesting, and it passes the time as well.
Now, tell me about the sporting activities.
That's where I do come into my own. Being a very keen cricketer and footballer, I decided to put my name forward for football and cricket. And in the cricket establishment, because they were asking for volunteers, what they were doing, because we had a lot of Australians in the camp. And so the obvious thing was to arrange test matches, which they did, and which I was very fortunate to participate in. And the same with football.
Now, tell me about the test matches. They're sort of jokey test matches. Well, did you have proper equipment? I mean, how was it organised?
Oh, yes, we had everything. We had the wickets, the pads, the ball, everything connected with the sport we had. So from that angle, it was the only difference was depending on the wicket. And the wickets, of course, it wouldn't be pure grass. But it was sufficient for it to be rolled out to made level, and therefore it was definitely playable. And even everybody that mentioned this fact, that it wasn't a farce of a match. It was a serious match, very serious, especially between the English and the Australians.
What do you remember about those test matches?
People
seem to have been very interested in them.
I remember because it was so interesting. We had a series of test matches lined up. We had five lined up, one after the other. And the English won two of them, and the Australians won two of them. And we were all geared up for the final one to see who came up out on top. And unfortunately, that was at the end of one summer. We didn't have sufficient time, so we thought, well, if we're still here, we'll finish it off next summer. But we weren't there next summer.
Now, how well did you do in the games? Do you remember playing? I mean,
I actually opened the batting for the English team, and I'm a wicketkeeper as well. So I was very fortunate to be able to be in the team. As far as runs are concerned, I can't remember a lot. I don't think I scored a great deal, but sufficient to say we got a good start usually. But I think. And the wicket keeping, of course, I was quite happy with that because I'd done that for quite a while before the war started.
Were there any famous players in there? Because you know, sometimes they were taken prisoner.
Well, if there were any, let me say this: I didn't know of them, so I don't think there would be on either the Australian side. In actual fact, I think that. On the whole, looking at the whole series, we were very competitive, but we're also very near to one another. There wasn't a great deal of difference in the two. But it was, I think, it was very appreciated by the spectators. There was always a tremendous amount of, and a lot of arguments going on between the Aussies and the
the who umpired it?
No, I don't know. We'd have somebody from each, I would think. We'd have an Australian probably, and we'd have an Englishman to counteract.
Now, what about football? Tell me about football.
Well, football.
Did you play for the football team?
I played for the football team, yes. We didn't get as many matches in because the weather wasn't all that good. But I just managed to get on the team, but I wouldn't say I was brilliant at that. It was just... one of those. And the funny thing about that is that they put the names of the football team on a big notice board, all the players who had been selected. And would you believe it? There was another chap named Farrington. And I said, that's not me, because his initials were different. So, and they got my name down with initials right. So I sort of went after him after, and I found out who it was. But it's no relative, as far as he knew. It's just a pure coincidence. But, I mean, it's not like Smith or Jones, is it?
Now, can we look at so you're quite busy. Now, can we look at camp organisation? Now, normally the British have a structure of their own, a British senior NCO and a structure of command within the British side.
Yeah, well,
can you tell me how the camp prisoners were organised?
They have what I can't remember what the phrase is, but they had a senior British officer, and everything as
now,
far
was it mixed officers and NCOs then?
No, the chappie was in charge, was called the British
senior British
officer. He was, and he probably had assistants. Now, whether they were previous NCOs or not, I've no idea. But the main man was recognised as anything that individuals wanted to discuss with him. He was free any time to discuss what the problems were.
And then he
goes every time he has to report back to the Germans on a daily basis as to things that they want to discuss with him.
But this wasn't an officers' camp. There were no officers in
there. Oh, no, there were no officers.
Right. So it's a senior British NCO, yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And did he do his job well? Do you remember it?
He did indeed, yes. He was well organised, and I don't think anybody complained about the way he adapted to trying to take orders from the Germans. Whatever was happening between him and the Germans was always told to us. Eventually, we got the messages coming through to each hut independently of what had taken place. We had I'm not sure whether we didn't have a record service sheet coming round every so often about what the latest situation was.
Now, there's also normally an escape committee.
Yes,
but you may not know much about them. Were you aware of them?
I was aware of it to a certain extent, but we never heard of anybody that was taking advantage of it, because it was all hush hush anyway. So we wouldn't. Whoever was participating, it we'd never know about it. But I think that was something that. Helpful. While we didn't have anything connected with the escape committee as such, individually, that is, we had, which was the wonderful thing, that, and this happened in all prisoner of war camps, there was a secret radio. And on that radio, we were getting the latest news directly from London as to what was going on. That was all duly noted, and eventually there was a messenger came round to everybody's hut, and it was left for one person to read it out to all the others. So we were kept in touch right up to the time of the invasion starting. Well, the invasion had started already when I was in the camp. But it was a question that it was how far and how near they were getting to where our camp was. So as you can imagine, what delight it was, because we knew that they weren't very far away at any given time. And if there was any hold-ups at all, we were then relying on the Russians, because the Russians were coming advancing one way and the British and American troops were advancing the other way from the south. But it was the Russians who were winning as far as we were concerned, as far as the getting near to the camp.
Now, you didn't know where this concealed radio was?
No, nobody asked anyway. I don't think anybody wanted to know. It was quite happy and thrilled to bits when we got the first one, the first time we'd ever heard of it. It was absolutely, it was a morale raiser. No doubt about that.
Now, you weren't on the escape committee, but, I mean, a lot of people have this idea that everyone in a prisoner of war camp is always trying to escape.
Yeah.
But it's not as simple as that, is it? Can you tell me what the thoughts of escape were, or not escape, or why it was impossible?
Well, from an individual point of view, I would say that unless you know a foreign language, i.e. French or German, I don't think there'd be one chance in a million of you getting through because of the language situation. I know some people probably, when I read stories, cracked on they were dumb, but that is a very difficult section to go on. But, I mean, from a personal point of view, there was no way I would have chanced my arm trying to get out when I knew where we were allocated. I mean, where would I go? I mean, without speaking a foreign language. I mean, it would be so difficult because I would be, I wasn't conversant in French and I certainly wasn't conversant in German. We knew a few phrases in each of those languages, but not sufficient to get through. So that's basically why personally, I didn't attempt anything.
Now, what about the guards? What were they like? How did you get on with the German guards?
Well, we called them the goons, actually. And they got this name because a lot of them were very familiar, or they thought they were familiar with the prisoners, which to a certain extent they were. But we always used to have a laugh about this because a lot of them said, I used to live in America, and did you know so-and-so, and have you been there? And they were interested in where we came from, whether it was deliberately or not, or just purely conversational. But at the time when we were in the camp, they were very good. There was no question of ill treatment from them at all. Some of them were over the top with their authority. Now and again, just shout. It's just verbally, you know, shouting to the rooftops, but not too physically. I never saw that or came across it at all.
Were they actually German, or were they?
They were German.
They were actually German. Now, they were older men.
I think this is the difference in, because some of the, you see, there wouldn't be any young ones on guard anyway, duty. All the young ones were needed more than ever before. In fact, it was so bad, we've seen this happen. There were school kids, really literally school children, about 15, 16 at the most, that were actually fully armed in the army at that time, because the pressures on Germany at that time were coming in both directions, east and west, and so they were getting desperate, so they could only afford to have elderly people guarding. And they were the ones, in retrospect, that while they didn't stand any messing, but they were friendly to a certain extent. The exchange, if you'd have you could have a word with them through the wire about anything and everything.
But did you try and learn German?
No.
Did they speak English?
Some of them could speak English, yes. Yes, some of them could.
Now, just a couple of general things. Did you get letters and parcels from home, or did you send letters home?
This is the greatest thing in my POW experience that happened to me. We had no letters whatsoever until one day there was an announcement to say there's a lot of letters which had been delayed, obviously, for one reason or another, which were now available to the camp members. And we had to all go to a certain place where they would read out the names of those people who there were letters for. And they started reading the letter, the names of people out. And then one came up for me, and I put my hand up, so I got that one. A bit later on, another one. I had 12 letters delivered, all at the same time. And you can imagine how that really boosted my morale. It was just as though, you know, if you wanted any encouragement, there it was. They knew you were safe. They knew you were in a prisoner of war camp. And that made all the difference to them and me.
Did you get parcels?
Not from individuals, no.
Would you write back to them, or could you write back
to them? Oh, yes, I wrote back regularly after that, yes.
So how often would you get letters?
Well, we only ever had the one delivery.
That was it.
Now, that's what made it so... I think what it was because the invasion had come in the middle of it. See, originally, those letters were in the pipeline. Because of the invasion, it had stopped the distribution of things like that to a certain extent, and they didn't get them until we'd been in the camp for quite a while. Like I say, it was, from a morale point of view, it couldn't have been better. And not only that, with the news that we were getting all the time, that we were getting nearer and nearer to being... released, that did make a whole lot of difference. And not only that, but the other factor, which was morale raising, was the fact of the amount of aircraft coming over in daylight, which was the Americans and the Flying Fortresses. They were coming over on a regular basis, and you could, you know, you used to cheer and wave at them, and the Germans would turn their heads away and hope they weren't going to drop the bombs anywhere near them.
But we
weren't not very... The camp itself wasn't very far away from Berlin, at Bankau. So you can imagine that not only were the Americans busy, but the Russians began to get busy.
So you'd see the night raids as well, I presume?
Oh, yes, yeah.
And they really improved morale, the air raids?
Yes, yeah. We didn't actually get any raids on the area where we were, camps.
You could see them going over.
Oh, definitely, yes, yeah. No doubt about that.